those names at least are released, that the teacher voice would absolutely need to be part of the discussion. There's, I don't see a way to have a successful superintendent without teachers feeling good about that choice.
Yeah.
So I would hope and I would assume that the school board would feel the same way.
Elizabeth, thank you so much for joining us today. Will you come back?
I'd love to. Yeah. Okay. Thanks for having me.
We do have, I think we have one announcement, Chris. Do you have that ready to go?
I know that there is a meeting of the Oregon Bad A Teachers Association. I'm not sure if I can say that part of the word on the air, so I will avoid it. The Oregon BATs. They do have a meeting coming up, but I don't have the exact date coming with me right this moment.
Okay. Well, you have been listening to KBOO Portland Labor Radio. I'm Steven Siegel with Chris Reiser. Thank you so much for joining us.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
KBOO Community Radio will be broadcasting live from the 25th Annual Good in the Hood Multicultural Music and Food Festival. Saturday, June 24th, will be on site at Lilith Albina Park and will broadcast the festival from 1:30 to 9:30 p.m.
One more time.
Tune in to hear sets from Surround Sound, No Limits, In Touch, Tamara Stevens, and more. Again, that's a live broadcast from Good in the Hood, Saturday, June 24th, starting at 1:30 p.m. here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Good evening. Coming to you from the studios of KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon, this is Prison Pipeline. I'm Doug McVeigh. Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration. We seek to promote awareness and activism in order to foster a safe, healthy, and just society. Tonight, we bring you the story of four women who've become known as the San Antonio Four. Back in the 1990s, Elizabeth Ramirez, Cassandra Rivera, Christy Mayhew, and Ana Vasquez were living in San Antonio, Texas. In September of 1994, they were falsely accused and arrested for child rape. They got railroaded. In 1997, after a sensational trial in the court and in the media, they were convicted and sentenced to harsh, lengthy prison terms and labeled as sex offenders. The women, who became known as the San Antonio Four, never stopped protesting their innocence and never stopped fighting for their freedom. They were finally exonerated in November of 2016. Ana Vasquez and Cassandra Rivera were in Oregon not long ago to appear at a fundraising event sponsored by the Oregon Innocence Project. I had the good fortune to interview them, so before any more ado can be furthered, let's hear from them.
Cassandra Rivera.
And Ana Vasquez.
Where to start? I guess September 1994. Tell me about what happened that day.
Okay. Back in 1994, in September, when we were enjoying our lives, we were together, Ana and I, we were partners at the time. We were working, we were raising two of my children, and since we had just gotten together, we were spending a lot of time with one of our friends. Her name is Elizabeth Ramirez. She's one of the San Antonio Four. And Elizabeth was also my best friend, back then. And She was expecting, and she was babysitting her two nieces. Well, we ended up going over there and spending a lot of time with Liz because we helped her a lot with traveling to the doctor, you know, taking her back and forth to work since she was, you know, pregnant and stuff. And it turned out that she ended up having to babysit her nieces for about a week. And this week changed our entire lives.
Javier Limon? Is that the guy's name? That would be the obsessive, manipulative, psychopath, sociopath. I'm not a psychologist, so that's not a diagnosis. That's just a character assessment. How did this happen?
You know what? It's really, all we can do is assume what happened. I mean, we weren't there. We don't know how and what came about. So in September of 94, what you're asking about is the time that we were called in for questioning for an alleged sexual assault on Liz's two nieces. And these nieces spent the summer, well, July, a week in July of 94 with Liz. And Cassie and I, like she mentioned, we were spending a lot of time there because, like she said, we had gotten together recently and we were not out as a lesbian couple. Okay, it was all new to Cass, and it was new to me in a sense that I wasn't open about my sexuality at that time. I've always known that I was a lesbian, you know, since probably, you know, the youngest age I can think of, but I wasn't open. And, you know, of course, San Antonio is, I'll say it once, I'll say it again, it's very conservative down there. And, you know, yes, even now, you know, San Antonio is still a conservative city. And how they came about, you know, it's really difficult to say because I know that the time that we spent there, all we did was take care of those children. And there wasn't anything out of line that they could have come up with an allegation like where me and Cass were hugging on each other or kissing, or maybe they walked in on us. There was never any kind of display of affection. And not to mention that Michael and Ashley, who are Cassie's children, were always around us. And we weren't even comfortable in our sexuality at that time. So for these accusations to come about is just unbelievable. And it puts us in the mind that he was in it for his own gain.
In doing the research, I found that Michelle Noble had done, Michelle Mondo, mm-hmm, at San Antonio Express News had done a lot of research, found Malone had apparently become somewhat obsessed with Elizabeth, who wasn't interested. In September 94, you get charged. And, trial by media, I presume, was part of it.
Absolutely.
So tell me about what did you face?
Well, from the get-go, we were pretty much guilty, convicted by the public because of the media. We were monsters. Before we went to trial, they said that our sexuality would not be an issue. It would not be brought up in court, and that was the first thing that anyone had mentioned, even at jury selection. So we were guilty from the get-go. We didn't stand a chance because of that. Yeah, and so when we went to trial, it was brought up so many times, at Liz's trial, she went first, and it was so sad and embarrassing, and because like Anna said, we weren't out, and for us to have to come out that way, you know, it was horrible, you know, because right away the first thing people thought was, oh, these are monsters, these are lesbians, they're just gay women that abuse children, and that wasn't it at all.
Yeah, and if you can remember back into the late 80s and the early 90s, you had that satanic panic going around with the daycare centers. And in the pediatrician's notes that were then sent to San Antonio Police Department, their investigators, she had stated that this could be possibly satanic related. And with that, you know, going around, it just made the media that much more wanting to cover it. It was a juicy story. It sold papers, you know, and the headlines were just terrible. You know, these four lesbian women gang raped these poor little innocent children, and they raped them because they're lesbians, and that's why the victims are females. You know, so I mean, yeah, we were guilty from the get-go through the media. You know, the media played a huge, terrible part in our convictions.
Sensationalism sells.
Absolutely.
Well, sensationalism sells.
That's even just, now.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, even now, you know, so.
You mentioned the pediatrician. That would be Dr. Kellogg, the so-called expert that, in fact, offered some physical testimony to scientific medical expert witness. It had been debunked by pediatricians many years before. And then, and I'll mention another name because you you talked about the Debbie Nathan. That was the who wrote one of the books really debunking that whole satanic cult myth.
Yes.
Now, she got interested in your case. And can you tell me about how things started progressing in terms of, I mean, you were fighting an uphill battle and then you got convicted and then you're inside. So, but people started to take an interest.
Well, by the grace of God, a gentleman by the name of Daryl Otto stepped into our lives. He was writing to Elizabeth. Elizabeth informed him of the facts of our case and how none of us were guilty, that, you know, there was a crime that had never been committed, and he took interest. He was a law professor. So he ended up researching and helping, and he brought us to the National Center for Reason and Justice, where Debbie Nathan was. And she is the one that brought our case to light, to the Innocence Project. So from there, that was when we gained hope. And that's when Michael Ware stepped into our lives. And it was like the best thing that had ever happened to us.
And and finally, I can say something good about media. Finally, some of the media folks started paying attention too. That's Michelle Mondo from the San Antonio Express News started doing some stuff. Did you when did you find out that things were starting to shift? I mean, you were inside. When did you start to notice things shifting?
I think it all started with the Michelle Mondo article, and I believe it was written in 2011, 2010, where she did a very well investigative report on Javier Limón and his pattern, because through that investigation she found out that he was doing this, had done this prior to us and after us, and was, you know, it was almost like he was his MO. So when that shed light, and then the filmmaking of Southwest of Salem, you know, and having the screenings, you know, doing fundraisers so that they can continue making this documentary, I think all that played a part. So it's almost ironic, but the media helped to put us away, and the media actually saved us and, you know, helped with our exoneration. I mean, it's in the opinion from the appellate court, you know, that, I mean, there's a statement of Southwest of Salem in there, you know, so... And obviously, it made some kind of impact for them to even put that in the opinion. You know, that's what I believe.
Well, and that's very much, let's see, September of 2012 was when the one of the two young women who were the witnesses recanted, and in part because... she said, at least because of these stories that Michelle Mondo, September 2012 is when she recanted. You got paroled in 2012. Was that before or just after that?
Actually, it was after that, but that had nothing to do with my parole, believe it or not. No, this was almost like an act of God. I really want to believe that, because I feel like for some reason or another, he kind of set the wheels in motion for me to be released. And, you know, I was sitting at a sex offender treatment program, and I refused the program. I was in solitary confinement. I had all these, all these marks against me, you know, because I didn't participate in it. And all Mike Ware did was give our polygraph, well, my polygraph, to the director of the sex offender treatment program and said, look, this is why she cannot participate in your program. It's not because she's trying to get out of it or anything else. It is because she cannot participate in it, you know. And from there, she sent it up to Austin, to her higher ups, and they released me, and I was being released in 45 days. It's a miracle. I mean, really, it is. It's very unheard of. It is. I mean, it was just like timing and sending it to the right people, because Cassie and Christy had previously been in that sex offender treatment program and had refused as well. So I was not the first one. I was actually the third one. So that's why I say that I think God had a plan for me. And, you know, truth be told, even when I was going out on parole, I had a lot of guilt, because I thought, why not Cass? Why not Liz when they have children? You know, but when I sat back and thought about it, I was like, okay, maybe it's because I need to, you know, speak. You know, maybe I need to continue to fight for them. Maybe, you know, I don't know, I'm the best one for it. I don't know. You know, it's just my way of thinking and helping me to cope with that guilt.
Survivor guilt, it happens, and it's, but you shouldn't. I mean, yeah. You know, this is it. You know, all this was madness to begin with, so it's just. You are listening to Prison Pipeline. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Today, we're speaking with Cassandra Rivera and Ana Vasquez, two women who fought successfully to regain their freedom and to clear their names after being falsely accused and wrongly convicted of heinous crimes. Cassandra and Ana had each been sentenced to 15 years in Texas State Prison, as had their co-defendant, Christy Mayhew. Elizabeth Ramirez was sentenced to 37 and a half years. The charges were false. The so-called expert, whose testimony helped put them away, used junk science that had been debunked and discredited years before. For God's sake, they were even accused of being witches and engaging in satanic rituals. The thing was nuts. The trial should never have happened. It was a farce. And yes, it was Texas, but it was Texas in the mid-1990s, not the 1890s, nor even the 1950s. Yes, they were finally released in 2013, when three of the four had nearly completed their sentences, but they were released as sex offenders on the registry, with outrageous, awful crimes on their records. It wasn't until November of 2016 that they were finally declared innocent. What these four women went through defines mockery of justice. It was truly a modern-day witch hunt. By the way, that's the reason for the title of the documentary about their case, Southwest of Salem, which of course refers to the infamous Salem witch trials. That's a period of our history that we've done a really great job of forgetting. And sadly, we've also forgotten the lessons from that time. Well, not everyone has forgotten. That's why groups like the Innocence Project exist. The scary truth is that law enforcement in this country is horribly slipshod and haphazard. Police only manage to pin the blame on someone for less than half the violent crimes committed each year, and less than a fifth of all property crimes. That's not to say they actually find the real guilty party or parties, but they sure are good at arresting certain groups of people. And our criminal justice system is really good at coercing guilty pleas and railroading the poor, the disempowered, and the disenfranchised right into the corrections system. There are a lot of things we need to do better as a society. We've caused a lot of damage that we need to try and repair. I have a lot of friends who are attorneys that do criminal defense and civil rights work. Some of the people they have defended have been accused of really serious crimes. And you know, sometimes it's hard for them to do that work. I mean, going to court to defend someone who's been accused of child rape, that's not an easy task. People get outraged over cases like that. And in spite of what we say, when people get charged and taken to court on really serious charges, we tend to presume they're guilty of something. I mean, I don't assume that. Probably you and other listeners to this show don't make that kind of assumption. but a lot of people do. And sometimes those people sit on juries or on the court bench. Okay, while I climb down from my high horse, let's get back to the interview with Ana Vasquez and Cassandra Rivera, two of the women known as the San Antonio Four. So you get paroled at the end of 2012, but then by November of 2013, all of you are free. You still got this conviction hanging over you. But so now, what was the process you had to go through?
We were actually brought back to Bexar County. Michael Ware had us brought back to Bexar County, and we had a court hearing. And what they did was they got us out on a bond because of the situation that was going on. Obviously, there was a lot of things within the case that needed to be looked at. And Mike Ware, he's amazing. So he, like I said, we were brought back to San Antonio, Bexar County, and at the hearing, they decided to let us go. And like I said, we were out on a bond, and we had a report constantly, once every two months. Yes, once every other month, we had a report. They had to know our whereabouts, our jobs. If we went out of town, they had to know everything still. And that went on until 2016.
I'm not a silly question, but, well, not really. I mean, up here we charge people for the privilege of being out on bond. We make them pay their probation officers. Did you have fees and all that?
I did. So, you know, because I was released on parole, I had to go and report to a parole officer. I was put on the sex offender registry, and I did have to pay my dues to be on parole. It was every time that I went to go see her, which was like twice a month. And just to add to what Cassie just said, the reason for the girls to be released in November of 2013 was, yes, we had a recantation from Stephanie, which did help, but it wasn't enough to have us released. What helped us was a junk science, and it was proven that what Dr. Nancy Kellogg testified to was now considered flawed evidence.
It would be hymenal tear or hymenal
scarring.
Which the American Academy of Pediatricians and every other expert had tossed out many years ago, but somehow this Dr. Kellogg said was actually legit, even though everybody else with a degree had rejected it years before. Does Dr. Kellogg still practice?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, she is.
And is still a powerful force in San Antonio. Very highly regarded still to this day.
So now let's, I have this unfortunate habit of starting at the middle, so I was going to start out by saying, first of all, congratulations. How does it feel about getting the Outstanding Documentary Award at the 28th Annual GLAAD Media Awards? That was just a couple of days ago for the documentary Southwest of Salem. So I didn't start that way. We'll get the middle in the middle part for once. But seriously, congratulations. That's a tremendous thing. Were you in New York for the thing?
Yes.
Yes, we all did. We all four attended. Spouses, partners, family members were there to enjoy the victory. It was amazing. Never did we imagine or think that we would be where we are today. So at that moment, I think when we did win that award, it was amazing and almost unreal for all of us. So,
did the documentary? I lost that in my notes somewhere. Did they start the documentary after your release or before? That was before the release.
Yes, okay. we started it while we were still in prison.
So how did that was Deborah Eskenazi. Now, tell me about her. Tell me about the documentary.
Debbie Nathan being another champion for us, is she reached out to Debbie Eskenazi as well. So Debbie Nathan was Debbie Eskenazi's mentor. And at the time, Debbie E., the director, was in the closet, a lesbian woman, and Debbie Nathan came to her and said, look, this could possibly have been you. you know, you need to meet these women, you need to go and hear their story and see what you do. And she came out and she said the first time that she actually sat down and met with us, and, you know, she just couldn't walk away from it after that. She was almost compelled to do it because she actually could relate to a lot of the things that we went through. So.
And we're southwest of Salem because this was nothing but a witch hunt. There are no more witches, so what'll we scapegoat and demonize next?
Yeah.
Got it. And so when did it get released? How long has it been out?
So it got released last year at the Tribeca Film Festival. So that was like in April. And yeah, it's been a whirlwind. You know, we've done, we've been all around the world, you know, and the film. And, but, you know, it's hard to believe because we were just trying to save our life and we were just trying to tell our side of the story. We never thought it would be in a film festival. We definitely didn't ever think that we would be getting a GLAAD award or, you know, or the Peabody Award that we just recently won as well.
The Peabody?
Yes.
Oh, now, when was this? When what?
That was right before the GLAAD Award.
Yeah. Yeah.
Congratulations. That's...
Thank you.
Damn. Wow. So what's the reception? What's been the... how's the movie been received? I mean, how's the documentary been received? I'm especially interested in how it's gone down in Texas, frankly. As it screened in Texas yet.
Yes.
Yes, we did. We did have multiple screenings at the Alamo Draft House, which is a theater in San Antonio. And we also go to universities in San Antonio to speak to law students and other people in the area. As far as how everybody takes it, everybody's moved, everybody's upset, and everybody's hurt at the injustice, because a lot of people are naive to what the system can do to you. Everybody just feels like everybody that goes to court or is tried for something is automatically guilty. But in some cases, that's not the case. And obviously, our case has shed a lot of light, and a lot of people thank us for showing them that this is what could possibly happen to people. And so what we enjoy doing is talking to law students, because we want them to see that not everybody is guilty just because they are brought in for something, you know, and whatever route they decide to take, whether they want to be a DA or they want to be an attorney or they want to be a judge, everybody has to be fair. So.
Right. Well, that's it for this week. You have been listening to Prison Pipeline. Find this and previous installments of the show on the web at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. Prison Pipeline has a Facebook page. It's facebook.com/prisonpipeline. Please give it a like. Many thanks to our guests, Cassandra Rivera and Ana Vasquez. You can learn more about them, the story of the San Antonio Four, and the documentary about their case, Southwest of Salem, by going to the website www.southwestofsalem.com. I want to thank the Oregon Innocence Project for bringing Cassandra and Anna to Oregon and helping to amplify their voices and to share their story, and also for all the great work they do. You can find out more about the Oregon Innocence Project at their website, which is oregoninnocence.org. A quick thank you to our engineers, Danielle Parks and Mike Fataklis. They always make us sound great. And thanks especially to you, dear listener, for joining us. You make it all worth it. I'm Doug McVeigh. Good night.
Don't you know I have faults like anyone? Sometimes I find myself alone regretting some little foolish thing, some simple thing that I've done. I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood. Don't let me be misunderstood. I try so hard, so please don't let me be misunderstood.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, unless otherwise noted. The Finance Committee is the third Thursday of each month at 5 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
Tune in Thursday, June 15th at 10 p.m. for another special live remote broadcast from What the Festival at the Wolf Run Ranch. Once again, we'll be showcasing the musical and visual artists at this year's festival, with interviews, music, and interactions with the producers and the participants, exploring what makes this such a uniquely immersive and entertaining festival. Again, be sure to tune in on Thursday, June 15th at 10 p.m. for our What the Festival broadcast. More information can be found on the KBOO website under Community Events.
Check it out, baby. If the funk gets too hot for your rump, turn the other cheek, Bob. Yeah. Yeah, Bob.
Give me that song.
KBOO Community Radio will be broadcasting live from the 25th Annual Good in the Hood Multicultural Music and Food Festival. Saturday, June 24th, will be on-site at Lilis Albina Park and will broadcast the festival from 1:30 to 9:30 p.m.
One more time.
Tune in to hear sets from Surround Sound, No Limits, In Touch, Tamara Stevens, and more. Again, that's a live broadcast from Good in the Hood, Saturday, June 24th, starting at 1:30 p.m. here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.